Owning a KFC franchise wasn't exactly what I dreamed of. Still, after years of scrimping and saving, it was a stepping stone, a sign of stability for my young family. The grand opening was a hit. The Colonel's secret recipe filled the air, families poured in, and the registers sang a sweet song of cha-ching. I got lost in the chaos, wearing my long hours like a badge of honor in this new venture. Even though I could easily appoint someone to close up after every day shift, I still chose to do it independently. So, this one late evening, as I was locking up, I noticed a shadow moving outside the kitchen windows. As I brought my face close to the window to see if someone was there, a man jumped right away from the darkness, almost giving me a heart attack. He had scruffy hair framed by wild eyes, and he stared into my soul. A shiver ran down my spine, but I brushed it off once he left abruptly. Probably some homeless junkie, I thought. Over the next few weeks, the man became a fixture, standing silently across the street. My wife, Carmel, dismissed him as harmless, but I couldn't shake a feeling of unease.
He probably wants some free food. You're worrying for no reason.
Carmel scoffed. Then came the night that shattered my calm. As I was leaving the restaurant, a rustle in the alley sent chills down my spine. I turned around to see the man standing behind me with a creepy smile, splitting his grime-caked face. Fear, primal and cold, coiled in my stomach. He spoke in a raspy voice, the words sending a jolt through me.
Just the bones. I only need the bones.
I rushed to my car and drove away, leaving him standing there in the dark. He didn't follow me or chase me, though. Days later, reviewing the security footage, I noticed something unsettling. The man wasn't digging through the regular trash. He was specifically targeting the bin where we disposed of leftover chicken bones. That's when a cold dread filled me. Every night, I started locking the dumpster with a heavy-duty padlock. This change in routine seemed to anger the man. The next morning, I found the padlock damaged like someone had beaten the crap out of it with a stone. The dumpster was ransacked, and again, the chicken bones were gone. Panic gnawed at me. What was he using them for? Was he selling them on some bizarre black market? Furious and determined to stop him, I decided to take matters into my own hands. We had a small incinerator on site for disposing of expired packaging. The following night, after closing time, I shoved a bag full of leftover bones into the incinerator and lit it up. A triumphant smirk played on my lips, thinking I'd finally put an end to this charade. But the next morning, my KFC was in a complete mess. The back door of the restaurant was smashed in, the deep fryer overturned, with grease splattered everywhere. On the wall, in a thick red substance, possibly oil or even blood, were these chilling words.
You can't stop the offering.
I called the cops and headed to the kitchen to clean up the place. As I stepped in, a dark figure loomed in the doorway. It was Edgar. Before I could react, he lunged, a guttural roar escaping his lips. We grappled in the dimly lit kitchen, the smell of burning oil and fear thick in the air. He was surprisingly strong, fueled by whatever madness drove him. In the struggle, he knocked over a metal tray, sending sizzling cooking oil flying. I felt a searing pain in my arm as the hot oil made contact. He grabbed me by the neck, but I too landed flying kicks and punches at random speed. Just as I thought I might be overpowered, the screech of sirens pierced the night. With a burst of adrenaline, I shoved him back, and right then the cops got in. The aftermath was a blur. The officers secured the scene, calling for medical attention for my burns. Edgar, cornered in the alley, offered no resistance. The police report documented the vandalism, assault, and his history, leaving no doubt Edgar would face serious charges. The most unsettling part of the entire ordeal was Edgar's crazed shouts during the struggle. Between blows, he'd scream about the offering, about how I was ruining everything.
You can't stop it. I need the bones. They grant immortality. You're ruining everything.
His words echoed in my head, a chilling reminder of the depths of his delusion. But even if I didn't understand his motives, at least they were rooted in a twisted reality, not the supernatural. Shaken, but alive, I sat in the ambulance, the throbbing pain in my arm a stark reminder of the night's events. The once mundane task of taking out the trash was now laced with a new kind of fear, but it was a fear I could handle. This wasn't a haunting or a curse. It was a man driven by madness. Edgar was finally off the streets and undergoing a psychiatric evaluation. As for me, I hope I never, ever meet Edgar again. The morning had started off like any other at the only KFC in our small Alabama town. I was behind the counter, wiping down the surfaces, getting ready for the usual rush. The smell of fried chicken filled the air, and the hum of the fryer was almost comforting. That was, until he walked in. The man was wearing shabby clothes covered in blood, carrying a dead hen by its neck, the lifeless bird swinging with his jerky steps. His eyes rolled around wildly, and he muttered some things to himself, words I couldn't quite catch. Then, his eyes locked onto mine. He walked up to the counter and slammed the chicken down with a sickening thud. "Need this chicken in my burgers. 6 burgers. And need this chicken only. This is my chicken." I felt a chill run down my spine. I tried to keep my voice steady, tried to reason with him.
"Sir, we can't use that chicken. We have our own."
His eyes snapped to mine, wild and furious, and I saw something dark and dangerous there. My heart raced.
"Okay, sir. I'll take care of it."
I carefully took the dead hen and, trying to keep my composure, walked to the back and threw it in the dumpster. My friend Melissa packed 6 chicken burgers and handed them to me. He sat alone by the window, covered in blood, occasionally talking to himself. When he was leaving, he turned back to me. "She was Cynthia." For days, I couldn't shake the image of him out of my mind. I jumped at every little sound, expecting to see him again. And then he came back one evening, same disheveled appearance, same dead bird, blood on himself. This time he ordered 5 burgers. We threw the dead bird out and gave High his burgers, which he ate alone while talking to himself. Before he left, he looked at me with those same wild eyes. "She was Rachel." 2 weeks passed and he showed up again, ordering 4 burgers this time. The pattern was unmistakable and it terrified me. He sat, eating slowly, and then left, saying, "She was Pauline." Curiosity and fear gnawed at me. I needed to know more about this man. So as soon as he left, I decided to follow him, asking Melissa to cover for me. I trailed behind at a safe distance, my heart pounding. He walked with the same jerky motion, talking to himself. He led me to an old church, where he spoke something to the guard who laughed heartedly with him and patting his back. I decided to approach the guard.
"Excuse me, do you know that man?"
The guard, an older gentleman, looked amused at my interest in the man.
"Oh, that's Crazy Christopher. Mentally ill, poor soul. But his father left him a ranch and all. He used to be an affluent farmer, you know. But after his wife passed away in a tragedy, he became, well, cuckoo."
"Oh my God. If you don't mind me asking, what happened to her?"
"No one knows exactly. Christopher was away and their daughters were at their grandmother's. His wife was alone in the hen pen when she suffered an attack or a stroke or something. Poor man. When he returned, he found his hen feeding off of his dead wife. Something broke in his head that day."
A cold dread settled in my stomach.
"He has daughters?"
"Oh yeah, 6 of them. Pauline, then there's Rebecca, and, Cynthia. She's a regular at this church, but I haven't seen her in a while."
Blood drained from my face. I dialed 911 and prayed that what I was thinking was wrong. The police took him in for inquiry from the church and then stormed into the ranch later that day. What they found sent a wave of terror and grief across our small town. They found his three alive daughters tied up inside a barn, chained and malnourished. It took the officers 3 days to find and recover the remains of Cynthia, Rachel, and Pauline buried on the farm. They were his three eldest daughters. It was later revealed in the news that Christopher was seeing visions of his wife talking to him, increasingly convincing him that they all had to suffer the same fate as hers to be together in the afterlife. After killing each daughter one by one, he fed them to a starving hen and then killed the bird before carrying it to the KFC where I worked, asking for it to be made into burgers. No one had answers to why he wanted to eat those chickens only, but all his talking to himself made sense. He was probably seeing his dead wife. The whole episode made me sick, and I swore off chicken or any kind of meat after it all happened. Taking a job at the local KFC seemed like a good idea. I was 24, fresh out of college, and looking for something to pay the bills while I figured out my next steps. The KFC was well known for its high turnover rate amongst employees, but it didn't bother me. I figured fast food jobs were always like that. Besides, the rumors of the kitchen being haunted were just silly superstitions to me.
People always make up stories to explain why they quit. It's probably just the late hours and the hard work.
One night, after I closed the KFC and was leaving for home, I spotted a woman sitting by the window holding an orange umbrella. My heart skipped a beat. I thought I had locked a customer in by mistake. I quickly unlocked the door and rushed inside. But to my shock, there was no one there. The next night, I started my shift with a sense of unease. Everything seemed normal until odd things began happening. Pots and pans would fall on their own, making loud clattering noises that echoed through the empty kitchen. The fryer would turn on by itself, the oil bubbling and hissing without anyone even touching it. Cold spots followed me around, making my hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. One time, the walk-in freezer door swung open with a creak, even though I knew I had shut it tight. And then, as I went to shut it, the soda machine started dispensing drinks on its own, spilling liquid all over the counter. I tried to ignore the strange occurrences, focusing on my tasks. But that night, after closing up, I saw her again. The woman with the orange umbrella was sitting by the window. Only this time, she was staring directly at me. Panic surged through me, and I rushed to my car, my hands shaking as I fumbled with the keys. Before I drove away, I saw in the rearview mirror, but the woman was gone again. The next day, I confided it all in my colleague, Mike. He was an older guy and had been working at the outlet for 3 years.
Mike, I keep seeing this woman with an orange umbrella. She just sits by the window staring at me. It's freaking me out.
Hey, congratulations. Mrs. Margaret has chosen to present herself to you as well.
Mrs. Who?
Look, you were always poking about why people leave this place so quickly, right? Well, you found the reason.
He pulled out an old news article on his phone from 4 decades ago. It showed a picture of a beautiful woman with a big smile. The headline read, "Local businesswoman disappears on opening day of husband's restaurant."
Who is she?
Look at her hands.
I did. To my shock, the woman was holding an orange umbrella.
This place was built 4 decades ago. On the very day of the inauguration, the owner's wife, Margaret, disappeared. No one knows what happened to her. People say her spirit haunts this place, but she's homeless. Just ignore her if you see her.
That night, as I locked up the outlet, I saw her again. I could see that her eyes were locked onto mine, but there was something about her that pulled me in. This time, as I unlocked the door and entered inside, she didn't disappear. She kept sitting there, still looking at me.
Mrs. Margaret?
As soon as I said her name, she got up slowly, and then without warning started floating towards the back of the outlet. My heart pounded in my chest as I followed her.
Mrs. Margaret?
She didn't respond, just kept moving silently. She led me to an old, defunct storage room and then vanished behind a wall.
The next day, I told Mike and the other colleagues what I saw. We all decided to investigate.
She hasn't done this before. If she's leading you somewhere, there's got to be a good reason.
We entered the room and I pointed exactly where the woman had disappeared. It was unanimously decided to tear down the wall. Mike and Jim brought out hammers from Jim's brother's truck, and before the opening hours, they started tearing down the wall. Soon enough, we found a small, hidden cavity behind it. One by one, we carefully entered inside. It was covered in dust and cobwebs and a terrible smell, but what I saw next made me scream at the top of my voice. In a corner, there was a skeleton, still wrapped in clothing from decades ago, and near its hand lay a dusty old orange umbrella, as if lost in time forever. Mrs. Margaret, apparently murdered by her husband and cleverly hidden away from the world for an eternity. Why? We'd never get to know, but since that day, Mrs. Margaret's ghost was never seen again.